gouvernement du Québec.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. CKUT 90.3
Morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a full show for you today, featuring two pre-recorded interviews and a podcast called In the Shower with Taz and Marcus. The first music interview is with Caroline Park. Her Western music takes her through the most difficult parts of her life. Trigger warning on this, Caroline speaks about being the victim of a violent attack. The second interview is with Mona Awad for her latest novel, All's Well. Mona explains it all coming up on the show. The podcast, In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, debunks the question, is water wet? 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings weather, and we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Wake in the night to the sound of a city asleep. I walk to the window, see the streetlights dotting the trees. And in that moment, I want you by my side. Over me like a wave, and I'm caught in the tide. But it's something I've always known. I pull out the photo we took at your cousin's birthday. Sticking your tongue out at me while I'm kissing your face. And it suddenly scares me, 'cause I've never felt this before. But it's clear in my heart, it's a feeling that I can't ignore. 'Cause it's something I've always known. Yeah, oh, it's something I've always known. In my heart, it flows right through my veins.
Something I've always known.
A beautiful mystery. mystery that I could never explain. How a soul like yours could make me feel so alive.
Azure. slipped from sight.
Up, but it's hold them down. You're the only one. Said that you want me, but I know it's not true.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Alberta's honky-tonk cattle country singer-songwriter Carolyn Park has a new single out called Pause and Pine. It's about learning to not take life for granted, even when everything feels monotonous, and utilizes Caroline's classic folk country storytelling style to hook you in. Caroline has been nominated for a number of country music and singer-songwriter awards and is releasing her second album, also called Pause and Pine, in August. With us today, we have Caroline Park. Hi, Caroline, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Sheila. Thank you so much for having me here.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a musician.
Well, my name's Caroline Park. I'm a stay-at-home mom and a singer-songwriter. I have four young children that are ages 3 to 8. And I first became a musician in 2007. I was 24 years old, and I was at an art market selling some abstract paintings that I did. And the lady next to me was selling watercolors. And she just happened to bring a guitar, and we started talking, and she put that guitar in my hands. And then I think the next week I went out and bought my own. And my life has looked very different from that time on.
Who are your bandmates, and what does everyone play or do?
Well, that's such a complex question. So it really is just me. I write the songs, I record them as an audio clip on my phone, and I email them to my producer. And my producer, he does almost all the instruments other than the drums. So he does lead guitar, bass, he's done piano, I believe he's done a little harmonica, and then I do rhythm guitar and vocals.
And who is your producer?
His name is Ray Gathercole. Met him through a friend of a friend. He's got a tiny little home recording studio, and I have the privilege of drawing on 76 years of music talent with him. So he's retired, and he just lives, eats, and breathes music. And he has his little studio, and I'm just so thrilled that I met him. He's really changed my life, and I come up with all these songs. I send them to him, and he just brings them to life. It's just an amazing relationship that we have.
Pause and Pine is your latest single. What is the story behind this song?
I wrote Pause and Pine almost as a antidote to trick myself, actually. My previous album is called The Road. And I wrote that album to help me through a hard time. But when I was done writing it, I realized that the process of songwriting for me had become a little bit unhealthy. And sometimes I would daydream about things that were better or things that had been better in my life. And while that's all fine and good, I also wonder if it was distracting me from the good life that I have already. So I was feeling like I was pining for what I don't have instead of appreciating my life. So one day I was in the garden and I was kind of crying about my life or things that hadn't gone right. And I walked away from the garden 2 hours later and turned around. And when I looked at my yard, I just lost my breath. And I thought, I just wasted 2 hours of crying when I have this beautiful life in front of me. So I wrote this song so that every time I fall into that bad habit, I could sing this song and loop out of the habit. And so what it is just to be grateful every day, regardless of where you're at.
May we hear some of your music?
Absolutely. I'd love that.
This is Pause and Pine on the Wednesday Morning After.
While you're working, words reflect in heavy regret. In the setting sun, don't understand, don't want to know why, but all those thoughts, they plague your mind. Just keep on trucking like it was nothing, try not to care, don't ever cry. Don't pause and pine, girl, so full of sorrow.
Just mind your conscience. Look to tomorrow. Don't pause and pine. What's done is done. Don't look down yonder. What others gather, 'cause it ain't yours, no. It's wrong to pine. Just stay the course and pray to God, girl, and you will prosper on down the line. Just keep on trucking like it was nothing. Try not to care, don't ever cry. Don't pause and pine, girl, so full of sorrow. What's in the past can't be redone. Just mind your conscience, look to tomorrow. What's done is done. One day was lonesome, and so you paused, reflecting back on all you've lost. Forgot your blessings, you sat and pined, robbing the day of joy divine. Just keep on trucking like it was nothing. Try not to care, don't ever cry. Don't pause and pine, girl, so full of sorrow. What's in the past can't be redone. Just mind your conscience, look to tomorrow. Don't pause and pine, what's done is done. Don't pause and pine, oh, what's done is done.
What are your plans musically for the next year?
Well, I'm going to do a little bit of promotion for this album, doing interviews like this one with many people across Georgia, Texas. I'd love to go on a little tour down there. And next spring, I will be going on a family road trip. I'm hoping in the month of June, and I'd like to book a little tour down in the States, possibly. I actually have another album that I'm hoping to release in April or May. So far, there's 11 songs on that album, and it is more of a singer-songwriter folk album opposed to this Pause and Pine that is quite Western. So I'm going to be releasing more of a singer-songwriter album next spring. And I have 6 of those songs already completed, and I'm still working on the other 5.
You are releasing your new album, Pause and Pine, in August. What is the process you went through when you made this album?
I had a great time recording this album because I was free to record it. I wasn't bogged down with a lot of emotion that I had in my previous album. My first original album is called The Road, and it was recorded in the winter of 2019 and 20. And it was following a knife attack, actually, that I survived back in September of 2019. So I don't know if you've ever gone through a traumatic event. I didn't realize how big it was at the time. And in the weeks and months that followed, it actually just snowballed on me. So I was unable to communicate with my children. I couldn't hold more than one conversation at a time. And all my kids were between the ages of 1 and 6 at the time. There's 4 of them. So I used to just cook my meals, and I would set the table, and I would go to my room and close the door and let my husband do all the parenting as much as possible. My brain was not connected to my body in the way that it would be for a normal person. So I was constantly in that fight, flight, freeze mode. I was disoriented. I was dizzy. And all I could do was write a song. And for 20 or 30 minutes, I would be elated, and I would be in a different zone mentally, and I'd feel like a whole person. So The Road was very intense for me. I came up with a lot of very happy songs because I was always trying to find a happy place. After that attack, I did end up writing 2 songs about it that use some minor chords, obviously, to invoke a lot of emotion. And one of the songs is called Daylight Breaks, and that's on The Road album. And the other song is going to be on my singer-songwriter album that I'll be releasing next spring. Recovering from something like that takes a lot of work. So I went into a very interesting place. I abandoned my family for a few months. I wrote this entire album. And then I somehow came out of it, and I got back to my family, and all the guilt that I had for essentially I was physically present, but I was mentally not available. And I would never have made it back home to them emotionally speaking, if it hadn't been for songwriting. So Pause and Pine is me being myself and being free and not using music to escape, but actually it was a healing process for my family.
May we listen to some more of your music?
That would be fantastic. What song are you going to play?
This is The Road on CKUT.
It's a dark, damp night in my neck of the woods, stirring under my covered porch, hoping the road don't flood. Crisp air's moving up my sleeves, blowing through the trees. Listen, leaves are shimmering, then the jingle of my keys. I just can't go inside, I'm kicking at the dirt. Slam that truck door, I'm totally immersed. Let's go drive down Shiloh Road, the engine's roaring, jump right in, cast a shadow, full moon glow, where I drive to, I've never been. I'm driving now, but you're not in. Alone, I think, what's never been. I feel this curve, cause driving's in my blood. Shift that stick, the engine's running good. I just can't take her slow, even when it's dark. The rain is coming down, heavy as my heart. Let's go drive down Shiloh Road, the engine's roaring, jump right in, cast a shadow, full moon glow, where I drive to, I've never been. It's a dark, damp night, stirring me alive, craving behind the wheel and the glare of the white line. Our stars no longer intertwine, and I just need to drive. Full throttle therapy, without you I'm dying. I just can't walk away, never knowing why. Slam that truck door, how long will I pine? Let's go drive down Shiloh Road, the engine's roaring, jump right in, cast a shadow, full moon glow, where I drive to, I've never been. And without you, it's all sin. It's a dark, damp night in my neck of the woods.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
Oh, well, I'm on all streaming platforms, but you can also check out carolineparkmusic.com, and all of my albums are on there. And if you were to purchase any of them, I would get all of the money. Whereas on streaming platforms or, you know, Apple Music, I do get a small percentage of that.
You have been listening to Caroline Park speaking about her music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes. cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you? Or will it happen to any of you on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Things get wet when they come in contact with water. But does that rule apply to water itself? Find out this week on In the Shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus. In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely listener, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized podcast that aims to answer the mysteries of the world in 15 or so minutes.
Have you ever wondered why we kiss? It's a bit weird.
Or why we yawn.
Or why men have nipples.
Or why coffee makes us poop.
If you've wondered the answer to any of those questions, we've answered them.
And we're about to answer one more.
So step into the shower with us as we answer, is water wet?
In the shower with Taz and Marcus.
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 This week we're answering a question from Dublin-based DJ and all-around good fella Jake Fitzgerald.
Jake Fitzgerald.
Jakey Fitz. Jake, this question is mental, and funnily enough, you're not the first person to ask it, and I've actually gotten into debates about this. He's asked us if water is wet, right? Obviously, it's a very shower-centric question, so we're digging it here and in the shower towers.
I am very, very sceptical of this week's episode. I don't think it deserves a whole episode. I'm ready to be rudely awakened, but water is obviously wet.
No, well, it's not as obvious as you think, right? And the debate about this has kind of been consuming the internet for the last 2 or 3 years. Like, it's actually fairly intensely disputed, right?
Ah, come on. How on earth can water not be wet? It's literally the essence of wetness.
Well, the whole thing comes down to the definition of wetness, Taz.
Wetness. I don't know how I feel about that word, but wetness is wet. Something is dry and something is wet.
Right, so that's the thing. Like, that to establish this, the first Google definition of wetness, right?
Oh, I can't get over that word.
Of moistness. No, of wetness is the state or condition of being covered or saturated with water or another liquid, right? They had to throw that in there, or another liquid. It's also a conditional adjective, right? To say that something gets wet means that it also has the possible condition of dryness, which water does not.
What? So things that interact with water can get wet, but water itself can't get wet because it doesn't have the option of being dry.
Yeah, basically, that's the long and short of it. And that's the thing that people are saying. Like, if you look at a table and you put some water on it, you'd be like, oh, the table's wet. Right? Water itself, though, can't get wet. It doesn't have the option of being dry. Like, it's kind of, you can't get water wet. So that begs the question, like, you can't wet water. Does that make sense?
But water is wet. But okay, I kind of see where the question comes from now, and I'll admit my initial response was a little aggressive. So let's smash this out a little bit more. Is water wet?
Okay, so the opinion on this seems quite literally 50-50 when you actually break it down, right? And it comes down, as I said, to definition. Wetness isn't a state of a liquid, but as I said, a conditional adjective based on the state of an object's interaction with a liquid, right? Do you hear me?
Okay.
the important definition is that the object that becomes wet, not the water. You can't make water wet by those parameters. So is it wet, or is the element which is needed to make a state of wetness presence water? Right?
So water by itself isn't wet.
So it would appear. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, that's everyone, like, water is the vehicle to make something wet. But by its own definition, water isn't wet. Like, if you go into water, you'll be wet because you've interacted with water. If you throw a dog into a lake, the dog will be wet, but the water won't be wet.
Okay, what about other liquids then? Can milk be wet?
Well, yeah, I assume so.
Because can the wetness that is being applied to the object only be water?
No, it said it in the definition. Water or another liquid. It could be beer.
So what? So milk is wet.
Yeah. Well, no. Milk is liquid.
So no liquid can be wet.
Well, that's the question. Well, I suppose it depends on the texture of the liquid. But for the sake of this argument, it's the fact that we're like, is water wet? You can't be like, is broth wet? Well, you can. It's just weird. It's a weird statement.
So how deep does this wet rabbit hole go?
That's dirty. All right, but since this is a question of definition, this is kind of what we're going in. And that's the whole thing about this argument, that it does boil down to the definition that water makes something wet as opposed to being wet itself. But that's the Google definition. I didn't want to take, you know, the Google definition as scripture. So I looked up an actual physical dictionary, the Merriam-Webster dictionary at home, for a bit more of an in-depth definition than what offered by our great googly overlords. I haven't used a dictionary in ages. It's a thrill. Do you know what? It's like,
it's the little things.
Do you ever think that, like, if you read a dictionary, like, front cover to back cover, that every single book that you read is just a remix of that? It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go on.
But I looked up the actual dictionary for a bit more of an in-depth definition. And I think it brings us a little bit closer to our answer, right?
Okay.
Right. So there, the Merriam-Webster definition is as follows. Wetness or wet is something containing, covered with, or thoroughly penetrated by water. First word, containing, settles it for me by definition.
Water definitely contains water.
Yeah, for sure. And all right, if you want to get very mildly scientific for just a second, right? A singular water molecule, H2O, on its own, isn't wet, right?
Okay.
But when it interacts with other water molecules, six to be exact, they form powerful chemical bonds with each other, which by the very definition of wetness makes them wet because they contain each other and they're in contact with each other and they are getting in contact with water. So that makes them wet. And in my opinion...
So that would be a H3O3 molecule?
No, it would just be a lot of H2Os.
H2O.
Do you know, somebody on a bus in Indonesia listening to this just going, what is this?
What in God's name is this? I actually did really, really well in school in chemistry. I got a B1 in my chemistry leaving cert exam. Honours, I know, very good. Decided to do media. But I would have been able to debate this a lot more.
I don't know if the question is water wet is popping up on the Leaving Cert or the A-levels or the baccalaureate. I don't know if that's...
So water isn't wet?
No, what we're saying is water is wet because water contains water. And by the Merriam-Webster definition, anything that is containing, covered with, or thoroughly penetrated with water is wet. So water contains water.
So water is wet. So yeah. So milk is then wet too.
Yeah, you keep on going back to milk. That's mental. There you go. But you know what? I'm saying I'm putting the in the shower stamp on this, like with the woodchucks, like with a few other, like the who came first, chicken or the egg. I'm calling it. Water is wet.
In the shower, smashing speculation once again. Any water facts to end the episode?
Do you know what? We usually end the episode with facts. So I looked up a couple of water facts, right? Usually we view the world in a northern and southern hemisphere, right? But did you know that there's actually a view that there should be a land and a water hemisphere, with the vast majority of the Earth's landmass being on one side of the planet?
Jesus! I never thought about that.
Seriously, go onto Google Maps and like zoom out loads and like you can actually just flip it and like half the planet kind of has like Australia and that's it.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, okay. What would you reckon the wettest place on earth is?
I'd say definitely somewhere in Ireland or Scotland. Like, there's boglands around my house in Multifarnham that are fairly wet.
Do you know what? Actually, you'd never think this, but it's in a place called Mosni Ram in India.
Okay.
Yeah.
India.
And they experience just under 12 metres of rainfall annually, right?
Oh my God.
That's just under 30 times more annual rainfall than Dublin.
I didn't think there could be more.
Yeah, but it's bonkers.
That's insane. But surely since water is wet, the wettest place on earth would be in the middle of the water hemisphere, no?
Oh God, you got me. What are we going to do?
In the show with Desimarcus, 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 in the show with Desimarcus. There you have it. Is water wet? One of those questions that was probably asked once at an after party and just got out of control when somebody put it on the internet. Answer is water is wet and so is milk.
Newsflash, so is broth. We can probably extend that to quite a few other liquids.
All liquids, really?
I'd say vermouth.
Mmm.
Kahlua.
Beer.
Beer. We're just going at alcohols.
Tomato soup.
Anyway, lovely listeners, thank you so much for dedicating your ears to our debunking of a life-altering question.
If you have any questions that you would like us to research and debunk in 15 or so minutes, then please do send them in. We are dying for more questions. If any of your relatives have any questions, if any of your friends have any questions, or if you indeed have any questions, then send them in.
And I mean, it can be anything. We just answered, is water wet? Come on, hit us with your best shot.
You can hit your questions to intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com.
You can get us on Facebook. Just look up In The Shower with Taz and Marcus. And if you want to get us on your socials, on your Instagram and your Twitter, just look up at In The Shower Pod.
If you enjoyed this episode of In The Shower with Taz and Marcus, then good news. There are over 75, if not 80 episodes that are ready and waiting for your ears. You can download them, listen to them on your commute, listen to them when you're exercising, listen to them wherever you do so, please, but you will be a more interesting dinner party guest if you do in fact listen to them all.
So we've just answered a question, but we have another question next week.
Woohoo!
What are we looking at next week?
Okay, so next week, this is one that came from Scotland, which
from
is
Scotland.
In fact not the wettest place on earth.
Okay.
It comes from a man called Heinrich.
Heinrich?
Heinrich.
Heinrich the Scotsman.
And he wants to know, are oysters actually an aphrodisiac?
That question will be ready and answered next week in time for your Monday morning shower. But in the meantime, keep scrubbing.
In the show with Desimarcus, 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 in the show with Desimarcus.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Mona Awad is an experienced author ready to tackle the university and college English scene in both her books, Bunny and All's Well. In All's Well, she lands us in the theater department doing the Shakespearean play, All's Well. With us today, we have Mona Awad. Hi, Mona, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. Thanks so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be an author.
So I'm originally from Montreal, where I grew up, and then moved to Toronto in my teens, and then really started seriously beginning to write in my 20s, like fiction. Before that, I kind of played around with poetry, and I used to love to write skits for class. I was involved in drama high school, but then I really got interested in storytelling, and I think a lot of it came from my love of fairy tales. When I was, I would say, 30, I did a master's in fairy tales, looking at the role of fear in fairy tales at the University of Edinburgh. And after studying them like that, I don't know, they just kind of found their way into my fiction. And I think All's Well and Bunny certainly are products of that great interest.
Where did you grow up and how does it influence your writing?
Well, I grew up in Montreal. And it's interesting, you know, I mean, I've always loved Montreal so much as a city. To me, it's like one of the most perfect cities in the world because it's so beautiful and it has such a sense of style and it's so unique. It's unlike any other place. And I think my experience of growing up there was very particular. You know, I grew up there in the 80s and I was raised by a French Canadian woman. My mother was French Canadian, originally from Asbestos, Quebec. But she made the choice at that time when language politics were really fraught. She made the choice to send me to English schools. And that was kind of odd, you know, to be going to English schools. She spoke English to me at home because I think she wanted to really kind of cement her grasp of English. And so I think my experience of being in Montreal was kind of, I felt it was a little bit of an outsider experience at the time. Because she was kind of raising me a little bit as an Anglophone, but all of my family are Francophone. So that was odd. And then also the choice to send me to Catholic schools, and I wasn't baptized because my father comes from Egypt and he's Muslim. And so they chose not to baptize me. So I was kind of in this weird middle place, you know, neither here nor there. And I think that that did inform my writing. It informs my characters, who tend to be people who feel like they don't belong.
What are you doing with your life now that you've released your novel, All's Well?
What am I doing with my life? Well, I teach. I teach creative writing at Syracuse University in New York, in Syracuse, New York. What else am I doing? I'm working on the next novel. I'm almost finished with that.
Okay.
So that's really good. And of course, right now, you know, the book is coming out. We're speaking a week before the book is released. So I'm preparing to do a number of virtual events over the course of the next month and a half. So a lot of public facing, you know, events talking about the book and you know, signing copies at bookstores and things like that.
Do you have any signing events coming up in Montreal? And where will your books be available next week?
They will be available at all book retailers. So you'll be able to get them at Chapters Indigo. You can get them at any, your local indie. I was so fortunate the last time with Bunny that I was able to go to Librairie Drawn and Quarterly in Montreal to do an event for Bunny. But what with COVID and the restrictions, I'm not able to do a signing in Montreal. But I do have virtual events pretty much every day for the next 2 weeks, starting on August 3rd. Yeah, during the week. And then I am also going to be at WordFest, which is the literary festival that Calgary holds annually. So I'll be doing a virtual online event with WordFest on the 24th of August as well.
What other interests do you have and how do these influence your work?
I've been thinking more and more about that because I'm so single-minded about storytelling, but I do think my other interests inform my work. I love music and I'll often make multiple playlists for whatever book I'm working on. And music really, really helps me creatively. The songs actually give me ideas for what to do next in the story. And they also give me a sense of the world before I've fully believe in it. And they help me believe it, if that makes sense. So they help me conjure it because they already have like some of the feeling of that world in the sound. So music for sure. I think theater, you know, I've always been really interested in theater. I've always been really interested in dialogue. I just love the momentum that can be generated between two people in the middle of an exchange. So for this book, especially All's Well, because it incorporates two Shakespeare plays and it takes place in a theater program at a New England college. That was really great to be able to draw from my interest in theater and just make the whole book, the whole world of the novel kind of a stage was really lovely. And I guess, you know, kind of another thing that maybe is something that informs my work is I'm really interested in drag. And I think that there is something about that world of creating a character, you know, and creating this fantasy that is very exciting to me. And that I think found its way into this book and into Bunny too.
How have you studied and what awards have you won?
I've studied English literature. So I studied English literature at York University, actually at Glendon College, which is the bilingual campus at York University in Toronto. And then after that, I did my master's in English at the University of Edinburgh. And I was talking about that earlier. I studied fairy tales there, and that was really important for my writing. And I think that because I did that, I ended up, you know, going to do an MFA. And so I did my MFA at Brown, studied fiction there. And then I did a PhD in English and in literature at the University of Denver. And that was really good because that's where I started really studying Shakespeare very closely. And that gave me the idea for All's Well. In terms of awards, 13 Ways was shortlisted for the Giller Prize, and it won the Amazon.ca Best First Novel Award. And it was longlisted for the Stephen Leacock Medal for Humor, and longlisted too for the Dublin Literary Award. And then Bunny was a Goodreads Choice finalist for Best Horror.
May we hear you read some of your novels to us?
Sure. I'll read the opening page. So I'll just set it up a little bit. So the story takes place at a New England college, and it's about a woman named Miranda, a theater teacher who's suffering from chronic pain that no one believes she has. And she's hell-bent on staging this production, the student production of Shakespeare's All's Well That Ends Well. But her students are mutinous and they want Macbeth. And Miranda is just at a loss. So this is the opening scene. She's on her office floor. She's in excruciating pain and she's thinking about how she has to face these students. Okay. I'm lying on the floor watching, against my will, a bad actress in a drug commercial tell me about her fake pain. Just because my pain is invisible, she pleads to the camera, doesn't mean it isn't real. And then she attempts a face of what I presume to be her invisible suffering. Her brow furrows as though she's about to take a difficult shit or else have a furious but forgettable orgasm. Her mouth is a thin grimace. Her dim eyes attempt to accuse something vague in the distance, a god perhaps. Her bloodless complexion is convincing, though they probably achieved this with makeup and lighting. You can do a lot with makeup and lighting, I have learned. Now I watch her rub her shoulder where this invisible pain supposedly lives. Her face says that clearly her rubbing has done nothing. Her pain is still there, of course, deep, deep inside her. And then I am shown how deep. I am shown her supposed insides. A see-through human body appears on my laptop screen, showcasing a central nervous system that looks like a network of angry red webs. The webs blink on and off like Christmas lights because the nerves are overactive, apparently. This is why she suffers so. Now the camera cuts back to the woman, gray-faced, hunched in the front yard of her suburban home. Her blonde children clamor around her like little jumping demons. They are oblivious to her suffering, to the red webs inside of her. She looks imploringly at the camera, at me, really, for this is a targeted ad based on all of my web searches, based on my keywords, the ones I typed into Google in the days when I was still diagnosing myself. She looks withered but desperate, pleading. She wants something from me. She is asking me to believe her about her pain. I don't, of course. And that is it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How is the main character Miranda a metaphor for Shakespeare himself, a broken teacher who gets better and better the more you read and do of him?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know. So Miranda is drawn from two sources, two Shakespearean characters. Helen, who is the heroine of the play All's Well That Ends Well, which is a comedy, a disturbing comedy. And then Macbeth, who is the tragic hero in Macbeth. And I think that it's interesting to think about Shakespeare's role in those characters, because a lot of scholars think that Helen from All's Well That Ends Well is actually Shakespeare, that he was writing himself into the character of Helen. And in the play, Helen is desperately attracted to this man who is above her in station. And she is powerless to make him reciprocate her feelings. And so what she does, clever wench that she is, trickster figure that she is from fairy tale, she turns the world of the play upside down to get what she wants, which is him, which is very questionable. Why would she want this guy? But a lot of scholars think that Shakespeare had a similar fixation with someone, and that he kind of explored his feelings about that in the character of Helen. So Miranda is really interesting. You know, she's desperate. When we first meet her, she's literally on the floor, crippled with pain and powerless before her students. And she wants all of these things. She wants to stage all as well. She wants to go back to the person that she was. And when we first meet her, that seems impossible. But through the magic of kind of the play, she's able to achieve some agency. And there's this amazing reversal of fortune that happens. And that's part of the reason why I love Shakespeare. Why Shakespeare is so inspiring is because so many of his plays have that reversal of fortune. So that was hugely inspirational in thinking about Miranda.
What is the meaning of death in the novel, and how does it play into the characters Miranda and Brianna's relationship?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So Brianna is Miranda's student, and she is the star. When we first, you know, meet Brianna, she's the star of this student production of All's Well That Ends Well. She's supposed to play Helen, and she's kind of a spoiled rich girl. You know, her parents are funding the theater department, so she has a lot of power on that stage, and Miranda has very little, even though she's the teacher and Brianna's the student. And, you know, Miranda's ill and feeling old, and Brianna is young and healthy and, you know, just beginning her life. So there's a lot of tension between those two that gets explored in the book. And that was probably one of the most exciting things about it, really, was kind of playing with that power dynamic between these two characters, because that's often that kind of power dynamic between the powerless and the powerful. And then that reversal that can happen. What happens when the powerless suddenly rise and the powerful suddenly fall? You know, that's very Shakespearean. So it was very fun.
Again, if our listeners want to read your book for free or to buy your work, where should they go?
Well, any retailer, any bookstore retailer in Canada for sure would have it. And Chapters Indigo, of course, too. And it's been made into an audiobook. So that will be available on August 3rd as well.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much for having me, Sheila. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Mona Awad speaking about her latest novel, All's Well. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
You're listening to Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal, or online at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The state of California and New York City have announced plans to require government workers get vaccinated or face weekly COVID-19 tests. These new initiatives come as the number of new COVID cases has quadrupled in the United States over the past month and are expected to keep rising for months as the highly contagious Delta variant continues to spread, particularly in areas with low vaccination rates. On Monday, the Department of Veterans Affairs became the first federal agency to require its frontline healthcare workers to get vaccinated. The American Medical Association and American Nurses Association have also joined with other medical groups calling for mandatory vaccination of all healthcare workers. In a statement, the group said, quote, "The health and safety of U.S. workers, families, communities, and the nation depends on it," unquote. According to the CDC, every county in Florida and Arkansas now has high levels of community transmission. Florida accounts for nearly 1 in 5 of all new COVID cases in the country. The virus is also spreading rapidly across Missouri, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. Meanwhile, a new study out of UCLA finds the number of COVID-19 cases and deaths both increased dramatically after states lifted eviction moratoria. The study estimates over 10,000 lives could have been saved if the moratoria were left in place. In international news, COVID-19 cases are surging in Tokyo as it hosts the Summer Olympics. The city reported over 2,800 new infections today, the highest since the start of the pandemic. At least 155 people tied to the Olympic Games have now tested positive for COVID. Meanwhile, Iran is also reporting record-breaking COVID infections. Nearly